Welcome to What a Creep, the show with Margot Donahue and Sonia Mansfield talking about creeps from the past to the present.
This is your quick guide to the biggest creeps, jerks, assholes, and losers, the best of the worst.
From two nice ladies who want the world to be a little less creepy.
Welcome back to What a Creep. This is Margot Donahue, and my cohort in creepitude, as always, is the amazing Sonia Mansfield. Hey, Sonia.
Hello, friend.
Hello, my friend. I've got a little notice for you. I have the app called Citizen here, and it talks about crimes and shit like that that's going on in my neighborhood, and it went off like 20 minutes ago. There's an escaped prisoner in my neighborhood. I didn't know there was a jail or a prison here, but apparently there is. So if you hear helicopters and stuff, I think that's what it is. So let me know. But yeah, this app is like the best, worst thing in my life right now. Because it's just like all of a sudden I look at my Apple Watch and it'll just blow up like, woman assaulted on Fifth Avenue. I'm like, what?
It's a combo app, actually. It's like crime and dating. That's on you. Swipe right. Swipe right if you're interested in the escaped prisoner.
Well, and the worst thing about it is that it brings out all these people that just say things like, oh, better call a social worker.
I know.
Don't look at the comments, you guys. Don't look at the comments. But
seriously, never read the comments. It's the worst thing you can do.
That should be another logo for us. Okay. So you guys, this is What a Creep. We talk about creeps every episode, and Sonia and I take turns. This week, it's going to be my turn. And I just want to let you guys know, we have a new person that joined our Patreon page. That's Anmy, A-N-M-Y. And we just post bonus episodes there and bonus content. So if you're interested in helping out the show, that would be great. It takes a lot of work to put a weekly show together. We get lots of materials and things like that. And also, Sonia, you designed an awesome website.
Oh, thank you. It's at whatacreeppodcast.com, and it's everything you ever wanted to know about What a Creep, but were afraid to ask.
And we have new merch in there, so we came up with an expression. Maybe next year.
Maybe next year. Huh?
And I'm getting masks and baseball shirts and all kinds of crazy crap. So definitely check us out if you want to help support the show. That's a way to do it. We got a 5-star review from Bo Loon. And then we got a 1-star review. I won't say who that person was, but did you read it? It said we're two Karens.
Wait. Oh, seriously?
Oh,
I haven't read it yet. I read the one that said we had a cackle about us, but I haven't read. We're two Karens?
We're two Karens with one point of view. I checked
That's
that person
bullshit.
Out. They just leave 1 stars everywhere. They're just miserable. But you guys, thank you so much for joining us. If you want to follow us on social media, we do have a basic Facebook page, but we also have a Facebook group. The Facebook group is private, but that's where Sonia and I do the most interacting. So just look up What a Creep podcast group, ask to join. And if you're not a total freak, we'll let you in, most likely. You can follow us on Twitter at CreepPod. The reason we have CreepPod is because somebody had What a Creep for 10 years on Twitter and never used it.
Creep!
We're on Instagram at What a Creep, and our email is whatacreeppodcast, spell that all out, at gmail.com. And you guys have been requesting for stickers. The mail situation, and I don't mean men, I mean like U.S. mail, is shitty at best right now. I'm going to do a little round over at the post office, later on in the week. So I will plan to get those out, but especially if you live overseas, it might take a couple of weeks. So just please be patient. And then what else, Sonia? Did I forget anything?
I think that's everything, Karen.
All right, guys. So today we are talking about Evel Knievel. Sonia.
Yes.
Do you remember Evel Knievel when we were kids in the 70s?
I absolutely do. I put my helmet on, right? I'm ready.
So, yes, he was born in 1938. He passed away in 2007. I think he's worldwide famous. Maybe he's more American than not. He did do a tour around the world, but he's fascinating. When I was a kid, once again, I'm an old lady, but it was in the 70s. All of a sudden, all the kids started doing jumps and popping wheelies. And playing Evel Knievel, he was a big, big star. He was big as like Fonzie or Muhammad Ali. He was like, he was just transcended. And he was on TV all the time. You know, I always heard that he was an asshole. And I was like, really? And so I kind of kept that back in there. And then, like I said, he died. And there were all these documentaries that are out about him. And then I was like, oh, yeah, he really was. So that's what we do on the show. We call it the creeps. He still is a legend. We're not asking to, like, unbury his body and then burn the ashes or whatever. We're not, no. But it's okay.
That would be an amazing stunt.
And I would put it on ABC Wide World of Sports on a Saturday. We'll be talking about that. So here are my sources really quick. Wikipedia, of course. Maxim, the article is called You Can't Kill Evil. Rolling Stone interview with Johnny Knoxville. The documentary Being Evil. Evel Knievel, starring George Hamilton. That's a movie starring George Hamilton. I Am Evel Knievel. That's the Johnny Knoxville documentary. It's really good. Evel, The High-Flying Life of Evel Knievel by Leigh Montfil. Evel Incarnate, get the name, by Steve Mandich. Chasing Knievel, The Robbie Knievel Story, which is kind of a bummer. And The Billings Gazette Journal. All right. Evel Knievel is a true American-made superstar who is considered the father of extreme sports. He is the idol of several generations of kids who love the thrill of his death-defying jumps and the persona he created. He presented himself as the American modern-day hero who tried to inspire people to reach for their dreams while also being decent people. But underneath his red, white, and blue jumpsuit and the capes and the canes and the bravado and his rugged good looks was a very troubled man who could be, at times, a huge asshole. He won it all and he lost it all in under 15 years. But even though he's been gone for over 13 years now, his name and his legend are still revered by many who found him an inspiration in a very dreary time in the world. So here we go. Trigger warnings. Physical assault, verbal abuse, domestic abuse, racism, misogyny, and anti-Semitism. He's a real fucking asshole.
Oh, boy.
So brace yourselves, folks. Okay. Robert Craig Knievel, that's his real name, and it's a German name. He grew up in Butte, Montana, born 1938. He had a younger brother named Nicholas, and his parents fought quite a bit, and they decided to divorce when the boys were very, very young. So the parents not only divorced, they left town and left the kids with her parents to raise them. And so the grandparents were raising the little boys. And that's always going to make you feel, especially when you're in a small town.
Yeah.
Nobody likes this. Yeah. And the grandparents did their best, but they were, you know, far along in life. They were much older. Basically, Evel Knievel had a lot of fucking energy, as you could probably imagine. When he was young, grandma took him to see a Daredevil show by a guy named Joey Chitwood. And that became the inspiration for him to get on bikes and then motorcycles. Butte was a mining town, which meant that it was full of miserable men. It's true. And America, Canada, UK, wherever you have a mining town, you see a lot of unhappy looking people, especially men who work in those mines. They're terrible conditions. They're away from their family sometimes for a few months at a time. So what's big in Butte? Bars and brothels. The lifespan is not very long, by the way, for a miner. Loretta Lynn's father, the coal miner's daughter's father, he died at 42 from lung disease. So it gives, and that's around this time. So it gives you an idea of like how hard it was. The town was full of bars and sex workers, and it also had a fair share of pimps, who, of course, when you have sex workers, some asshole has to come along and then take advantage of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they dressed flashy. Evel thought they were kind of cool. They wore flashy clothes. They had a menacing presence. They had a tough attitude. So Evel, kind of the back of his head, sort of took note of that. He dropped out of high school when he was 16, and he starts working in the mines because he's not a school guy. This is a guy who is not a team player. He has to be in charge all the time. You can't tell him what to do. So working in a mine is not great for him. He's too rebellious for that, so he turns to something more exciting and pays better. Stealing.
Oh, well, yeah.
He becomes really adept at stealing hubcaps. Like, you stop at a stoplight in Butte, which has got to be really slow. But he would, like,
my gosh, there's probably like one stoplight
in all the whole fucking town. And he would go over and he would just take them off. And he had like hundreds of these hubcaps around his place. He also brags a lot and says a lot. I try to keep this as factual as possible. Some things I just have to take his word for. He also starts breaking into homes. He starts cracking safes. It's not like in the movies where somebody kind of very gently turns the dial back and forth to crack the safe. He's like, no, you just blow the shit up and there you get the safe. He's a rugged guy. He's got no time for
that.
He
is.
So one of the many times he was in jail, he was in jail with a man named Knoffel. And supposedly the night guard said, look at what we got here. Awful Knoffel and Evil Knievel. And Evil went, damn, that's a name.
Mm-hmm.
He is a brilliant salesman. He's a brilliant marketer. This guy was like an idea machine. I mean, I will give him that.
It was probably much better than what he was thinking, which was like Gary Knievel or something like that.
Well, I mean, he would have been Robbie Knievel, which actually became, yeah. You know, that was his son's thing. But, you know, Evil Knievel. And then he spelled it E-V-E-L. Because he didn't want it to be that much associated with Satan.
Right.
But it sounds cool. And it sounds mysterious.
I'm Chad Knievel.
I can't top that. I'm just trying to think of Wilbur Knievel. In the meantime, he has his eye on a pretty young girl from Butte, Linda Bork. She goes to the local high school. She's really smart. And lots of people notice her. She has dark, she's very dark hair. He's blonde. She's got very dark hair, blue eyes, really pretty. The problem is that Linda is incredibly shy. She was not raised to speak up for herself, or that could have just been her personality. You know, she just might have been a shy person. Well, the first couple of dates that they went on, he essentially kidnapped her.
Oh my God.
Right off the street and drove off with her. So one story goes that they were both at the ice rink. And she was with her friends, he was with his friends. And when he noticed her, he basically like grabbed her and put her in the car and drove away, wearing their skates still.
My gosh.
They take
how romantic.
Off. Oh, swept her off her feet. They take off into a blizzard and then they're stranded there. The cops come along eventually and they throw him in jail for contributing to the delinquency of a minor. His dad paid the bills. Mother and dad are kind of in and out. They both remarry and have kids. It's a little complicated, but anyway. The second time he kidnapped her, they wound up getting married. This was in 1959.
Oh my God, it's so weird.
This poor woman stood by him for the next 38 years.
Wow.
Like a lot of these stories, pretty soon she's pregnant. Knievel needs to make money right away. So first he tries a home security service. And this is where he goes door to door and says, hey, if you pay me, I will make sure your home is secure. If you don't, some shit might be stolen from you. What's it going to be? That kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually people kind of caught on to that. And then I love this. He had this idea of running a hockey team. It was the Butte Bombers. Even though he's not a team player, he came up with this. He's a really good talker. He was a really good salesman, like I said, a real good marketer. And he manages somehow to convince the Olympic team from Czechoslovakia in 1960 to come to Montana and play the Butte Bombers. And he didn't sell the place out, and they lost terribly. And he, by the way, on top of that, didn't have any money to pay them. So the U.S. Olympic Organization had to come in and cover the costs because it was going to cause an international incident if they didn't. It was still, run by communists. One time he was out riding his bike and he broke his collarbone. And this is when he wound up getting the one and only desk job that he had, which is selling insurance. He was told to read the book Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude. You know, it's all those positive thinking books that were coming out.
Mm-hmm.
In the 50s and 60s. Well, he wound up being the top salesman and he was selling thousands of policies. And one of his biggest clients was a mental hospital where he would just walk around and sign people up.
Oh, geez.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
He was really persuasive. He did really well.
Do you have to be that persuasive, though, if you're walking around a mental institution with a clipboard?
You know what, like, though? Here, sign here. You're famous.
If you're goal-oriented and you want to get as many people as possible, he's thinking big.
He certainly is.
So he goes to the president of the company and he says, look at me. Look how much I can sell. I demand you make me vice president of the company or I'm going to quit. And the guy's like, you can't run a company. You're just selling stuff. Like, you're a good salesman, but no. And he gets pissed, so he quits. And he moves to Washington State, near Tacoma, Washington, to sell Honda motorcycles. To get folks to even consider buying these Japanese-made bikes, he started stunt shows to get people to drop by. So one of those stunts involved him jumping over a 20-foot-long box that was filled with rattlesnakes and two mountain lions.
What? Where did he get mountain lions?
They're in the mountains. You know, it's Washington State. I guess you can get some. Where did they get rattlesnakes? I don't know. But it was filled with rattlesnakes and two mountain lions. The mountain lions were totally freaked out and hid under the building. So he jumps over and he hits the box as he's landing and it sets the snakes loose everywhere. So people are all
fuck
like
that.
So, but this is Tacoma, 1962. What are you going to do with your time? There's nothing to do. I'm going to go see the rattlesnake show. I'll just wear my boots. I mean, I'm going to, you know, wear my waders or whatever.
You'll be fine.
Yeah. Fine. But this is where his reputation as a showman starts to take off. And this is when he realizes, like, I'm crazy and I can do stunts and people would pay me for it because you only have to work for like a half an hour and you get all the money. So he learns, he's perfecting his pop, you know, wheelies, popping the wheelies. He's learning about how show business events are run in his free time. And then he moves his family to LA and he's trying to attract interest in his business. And he's now officially called Evel Knievel everywhere. I want to take you to 1961. I don't know if this happened in your house, but ABC launches a weekend afternoon show called The ABC Wide World of Sports. This was a big deal in my house. Mm-hmm. It was every weekend. It was a show that it was all afternoon. And they had baseball and football, of course, but they also had skiing. And you'd see the guy like the agony of defeat, you know, and falling down the mountain.
The agony of defeat guy.
Yes. The ice skating guy that jumped the barrels and then he misses. And car racing and track and even arm wrestling competitions. They need content because they've got like 4 or 5 hours to fill. So they're constantly filming stuff year round and they had a huge audience. I always have this memory like eating potato chips with onion dip with my dad and watching like crazy sports.
Oh my God, that's so good.
Oh, it was so good.
So good.
It was so much fun. Evel thought his stunts would be perfect for them, and he's not wrong. So his way of getting attention is he found out where the ABC office was in LA, and he just rode his bike up and down the street popping wheelies until somebody came out. He was working on a team called Evel Knievel and his Motorcycle Thrill Show.
Catchy.
Catchy. He was clean-cut family man, that they thought. He was from Middle America, super handsome, and he had a lot of confidence.
And mountain lions.
And mountain lions and rattlesnakes. Mm-hmm. In the mid-60s in America, it was ramping up its involvement in Vietnam. And my dad married my mom, and one of the reasons they got married so young is my dad didn't want to get drafted. They still tried to get after him. So it was a very complicated time. There was the protest movement. There was the civil rights movement. The country was changing, and plenty of people just didn't like hippie protesters, and they didn't like people talking out and being un-American. I don't know if this sounds familiar to you or not.
I was just going to say, I wonder what all that's like.
Yeah. So Evel at first would wear black leathers to do his jumps because he was like, well, I'll tell you in a second. He did wear black outfits and then he became friendly with Elvis Presley, of all people. And Elvis would wear these white jumpsuits. And he was like, oh, that's rad, but I should wear one that's red, white, and blue. like the flag. And so he would go and he would talk about family and faith. He hated drugs and he hated bike gangs and he hated hippies and all that shit. Like, he was just this rugged guy that would ride his motorcycle. You know, Ben wanted to be like him. Women wanted to sleep with him. And he also had the notion of telling kids to wear their helmets. And he was a big proponent of that. That's one thing you can give him, because nobody else in the 70s said to do that.
Yeah, no, this is a time when nobody used a seatbelt or any. That was not a thing.
We would be, my aunt had a station wagon, and we'd be in the back of that station. There'd be like six of us just rolling around in the back of the station wagon. Like,
that was us and my dad's truck. He had like a Chevy truck. We used to just ride around the back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, nothing holding us from like
propelling us out.
Yeah. Like a bump on the freeway. And now your kid's on the freeway. Like nothing.
It was the wild, wild west. You guys, our parents just let us out the door and I just come home for dinner.
I'm happy to be alive. Yes. I don't know how I made it through.
He was a man of his word. So when he said he was going to do a jump, no matter how crazy it sounded, he was going to try to do that jump. And no matter how many times he crashed, he insisted on being helped up so he can talk to the crowd. Well, when he could do that. Mm-hmm. From 62 to 66, he's perfecting his act. He has more than a few crashes, broken bones, and concussions. At one point, what happened was that one of his legs became shorter than the other one, just from all the pelvis.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, he crushed his pelvis several times, which caused a lot of bullshit to happen, but he had to walk with a cane. But he's decided, like, if I'm going to walk with a cane, I'm going to look like a pimp. I'm going to get a cane that has diamonds on it and gold and looks flashy, and it's going to make me look cool. It's like a Snoop Dogg. Like, that's exactly how he dressed. It's all a part of his shtick.
Mm-hmm.
In 1967, Caesar's Palace opens in Las Vegas. Have you ever been to Caesar's Palace?
I have.
It's fun. It's fun to see the fountains.
Yeah, it's super fun.
Yeah. That's the year it opens, and he walks around Vegas with his wife. He notices the fountains at Caesar's. He's like, that would be really rad if I jumped over that. That would look really cool. He pitches the idea to ABC, and they decide, okay, we'll air it, but we're not going to air it live. We'll film something, and then we'll decide what we're going to do with it. And they used to hold on to stuff for, like I said, weeks or months. It would be like when things took place. Like, nowadays, everything has to be immediate. So he asked his friend, John Derek, to produce a film for him. Do you know who John Derek is?
Bo Derek's husband?
Yes.
Okay.
Bo Derek was a sex symbol in the 80s. That was her husband. He was like much older than her.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, he was married to Linda Evans of Dynasty.
Oh my gosh, I totally forgot that.
John produced this jump over the fountain. John was producing it. Linda was holding the camera and filming it. Linda Evans was filming this jump. That
cinematographer and Dynasty star, Linda Evans.
And her shoulder pads. I put a clip of this on our Facebook group. Like, this jump is fucking incredible. Knievel does his usual shot of Wild Turkey, and then he starts over the jump, and then his bike decelerated midair. So he was working against the bike. All of a sudden, the handlebars were ripped out of his hands as he hit the parking lot. This footage is famous, and it's super gruesome. Like, you're just like, how is this person able to walk after this? He broke his pelvis, fractured his wrists and both ankles, and then it was reported that he was in a coma for 29 days. He was never in a coma.
Okay.
But he thought that would be good to say, like, oh yeah, I can't wake up. No. It would be good for publicity. So ABC...
Seems like the opposite to me, but okay.
But it worked. Because he gave very few interviews, so people were like, well, what happened to the guy? What happened to him? We need closure. Okay. We need closure. We saw this guy. He made sure he healed up a little bit for like a month. So ABC wound up paying for the footage, and it cost them 10 times more than if they just had filmed it themselves. And it was this huge hit. He was immediately a TV star. Around this time, he proposes that, you know what I'm going to do next? I'm going to jump the Grand Canyon. And the U.S. Forest Service said, no, you fucking won't. So, so he goes on tour and he has a few more jumps and tends to land much more than he crashes. But either way, people love it. He said at the time, no one wants me to die, but if I'm going to crash, they don't want to miss it, which is true. He plays...
Well, his wife might have a different... Linda. Maybe she's fine with it.
She doesn't say much. She's very, very quiet.
Yeah. Well, he kidnapped her, so...
Exactly. She's still... Blink twice, Linda.
Blink twice.
Blink twice at the camera if he wants to get you. In 1971, he played two sold-out shows at the Houston Astrodome, jumped over 19 cars, which was a world record at the time. The footage was used for the 1971 movie Evel Knievel, starring George Hamilton.
Wait, so the title actually says...
Evel Knievel.
Starring George Hamilton?
No.
Oh, okay. Just
That's me just giving color
sure
to the situation.
Okay, the full title isn't Evel Knievel starring George Hamilton, because I wish it was.
If you go to Evel Knievel and type that into Amazon, 1,000 things come up. Like, everything is Evel Knievel and his biggest jumps, Evel Knievel at home. It's just like, he just branded that the shit out of that name. He's smart.
Yeah. He is smart.
Hamilton was known as a pretty boy actor at the time. And he thought playing Knievel would be the tough guy role he needed. He's like the ultimate cowboy role. Knievel didn't like him one bit. And when the script was finished, he demanded that George Hamilton come to his hotel room to talk to him about it. So George Hamilton is super psyched. I'm going to be starring a movie. I'm going to play this guy, right? He shows up. Knievel's drunk. And he says, I want you to read the script to me. He's like, what? He's like, I want you to read that script to me right now. So Hamilton gets in a chair and starts reading the script out loud. And then Knievel just starts barking out like, I hate this. Take that line out. That's stupid. Blah. And that's when Hamilton realizes the guy is just a total mean drunk and a bully. Mm-hmm. And basically tries to keep away from him during filming.
Good call.
This movie is available on Amazon Prime, if you're curious. If you're a member, you could check it out for free. For 20 minutes, it's a hoot. It's longer than that. Just watch it for like 20 minutes. But...
20 minutes, great.
It's awesome. Evel...
The movie's 90 minutes long.
Yes, exactly. Just watch the first 20, you get the idea. Evel thanked George in person for his nice portrayal, but later called him a pussy for not thanking him enough for breaking out of his young hunk image.
What an asshole.
He said, wait, giddy up.
Yeah.
Fun fact about his bikes, they were all Harley Davidsons, because of course. Mm-hmm. They were made of steel, aluminum, and fiberglass. They weighed anywhere from 300 to 500 pounds.
Wow.
So think how that is to fly in the air on something that weighs 500 pounds and keep control of it. He has balls the size of New Jersey. I mean, this guy.
Yes.
It's both. Balls the size of church bells. In 1972, he decides his next big jump is going to be, because he can't go over the Grand Canyon, he's going to go over the Snake River Canyon, which is near Twin Falls, Idaho. As he's preparing for that, he puts on some big shows to garner interest in this, right? One of them was at the Cow Palace. Can you explain to the audience what the Cow Palace is?
It is this palace made of cows. No, I'm kidding. It's here in San Francisco, and it's like a big circular like Coliseum, and they used to do like rodeos and shit there. And then eventually it turned into a, like, kind of a concert destination.
Mm-hmm.
And now not so much. They do the dog show there. And I love the dog show, by the way. I love the dog show. We go almost every year. And then they do like gun shows and, which I don't go to, and motocross.
So Evel is having a show there. I mentioned before about how much Evel says he hates drugs, but he takes a lot of, we'll talk about that, over-the-counter stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He also continually talks in all of his interviews how much he hates bike gangs and that they're filled with thugs and drug dealers. He said that. I am not saying that. Anybody from Hell's Angels listening right now. But the bike gangs got pissed off. They're like, who's this flashy asshole that's just flying through the air? Like, we're the real deal. You know, you got to work hard to be in a motorcycle gang, right? So the bike gangs, wherever he goes, they get tickets and they show up just to taunt him at gigs. You reap what you sow, brother.
Hey, before the internet, you had to troll the old-fashioned way.
You had to show up.
You had to show up and, like, taunt them to their face.
Right, right. Spinning
kids
distance.
These days with their anonymous one-star reviews calling people Karen.
So this
you don't know how lucky you have it.
Yeah, this place was like, they played concerts here, but it also was like they had cows and horses and stuff like that. Yeah. So it was kind of rednecky anyway. But he goes to the Cow Palace. He's being taunted in the crowd. And most of them are fans, but there's like 100 bikers. Yeah. He once again crashes, winds up with a broken back and concussion because this time the bike fell on top of him. So they're trying to get him away. The bike gang goes crazy. The Hells Angels are like freaking out, cheering that he crashed. And they start heading to the ground because there's hardly any security.
Oh, my gosh.
So the bikers are heading in. And so the Evel Knievel's people are jumping in to jump, you know, to keep them away from Evel. And then the people from the crowd started jumping in to get the Hells Angels away from Evel's people. So it turns into a whole fucked up melee. But somehow Evel Knievel, you know, the bad publicity doesn't get to him. He's still considered a hero. Meanwhile, Idea Toys creates with Evel Knievel, they have a licensing agreement. So they make all kinds of toys and games for him. And there was a particular toy. It was this Evel Knievel jumping thing. Like it was like a doll and it had a motorcycle and you cranked it and then it would take off and would do wheelies. My brother got this for Christmas and like he screamed for hours. Like he was like lost his goddamn mind off of
is
that.
Is it the thing with like you pull it?
Yes. You crank it and then you pull it and then it just like bing, it shoots off. And then if you have the right kind of ramps, it'll flip over.
Yeah.
We were kids. This is all we had.
Yeah. Yeah. Boys in my neighborhood had this.
Yeah. The kids in Long Island that I grew up with, I grew up with around a lot of boys, but all of a sudden they're on their bikes. They're doing the thing where they put the baseball card and the spokes to make it sound like it's an engine. Mm-hmm. You get streamers, you're getting like flags on your bike, and then they're just putting plywood up to garbage cans and jumping. No helmets, no knee pads. Mm. No, this happened everywhere. But he was a huge, huge star, and this earned him like $60 million between 72 and 77. He made a lot of money.
Damn.
And at this point, he's an A-list celebrity. Everybody knows who he is, but his ego is showing through his interviews where he's openly bragging about how many chicks follow him on tour, that he's out every night and goes to the clubs and he goes drinking and dancing and he gets as many ladies as he desires. So on the one hand, he brags about being a family man and he will have 4 kids with Linda. But on the other hand, he fools around and he treats their mom like garbage. He hates women's lib, not a shock. He brags about having a wife who keeps her mouth shut and just takes care of him. When he does talk about Linda in the press, she is forbidden to speak to the media. He's usually patronizing. He told Sports Illustrated in 1974, "We've been married for 15 years and her face is always the same, a smile. Oh, I yell at her and boss her around, but she has only one job in life, to serve me."
What an ugh asshole.
In another press interview in 1974, he brags about having affairs with over 600 women since he became famous. So it's only like a few years.
That's how he broke his pelvis. From all those. He's fucking gross. And you know, every time he did a stunt, his wife was like, maybe this time. You know it. He's a piece of shit.
One of his former flames was Jennifer Flowers, who we talked about in our Bill Clinton episode.
Ooh, interesting.
In Penthouse magazine, he talks about women fighting over him at a club called, this is real, Filthy McNasty. It's the 70s, people.
Is that the bar where they danced in Flashdance? Maybe? No, it isn't. It is. I'm teasing. But
no, it's in Hollywood.
Yeah, I would like a t-shirt from that bar, please.
He picked up a blonde He brags about in this interview that he picked a blonde and a brunette were fighting over him right outside his banquette. And he decided to pick the blonde to be his date. And then he took her up to his hotel room and immediately she started putting scratches on his back. And then he said, I just threw her right out of the hotel room and then threw the dress after her. And then Penthouse says, can we use that quote? He says, I don't give a goddamn if you use it. It's the truth. I think if a guy's married and he has a little sex with another woman and still be with the wife after 14 years, that means she must be pretty damn good. Ay, ay, ay.
What an asshole.
If you think this is just because he was a dude at the time in the 70s, in 1998, he was giving an interview and he said about feminists, most of them are gay and they're ugly. They look like truck drivers or tacklers on a football team.
That's an awesome stereotype.
One of his inner circle cronies said to the New York Times, this is back in the 70s, he said, Evil is the most bigoted, rowdy person I've ever encountered. He'd rant on about Jews, Italians, Polish people, and blacks. Evil frequently made a point of telling Jewish men that worked with him that he hated and didn't trust Jews. He was attached to a TV pilot in 1975, and he said about women, if the good Lord wanted women riding motorcycles, he would have included front and rear bumpers as standard equipment. Ay, ay, ay.
What?
I know, it doesn't even make sense.
Is it to say that women can't drive? Is that the joke?
Yeah.
Okay. Hilarious.
Yeah.
Asshole.
His co-star was an actress named Tracy Butler. They were filming a pilot, so they were showing it for critics. She shows up in her leather jumpsuit and is like, look, boys, check me out. Aren't I hot? He promptly went over and spanked her on the behind in front of all the reporters. Talked about how hot she was.
Nice.
He also was spending money as soon as it came in. He built a $200,000 house in Butte. This is 1970, $200,000. Like, it's a ridiculous sum of money. He had airplanes. He had a fleet of cars. He had boats and yachts. He had a touring bus that was a $100,000 dude's paradise. He liked to dress in furs and satin suits. He was flashy. But he said the whole point was he wanted to spend every single penny before he dies, which I kind of respect.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, and he's doing these stunts that could result in his death. So spend it while you got it kind of thing.
Sure. While you're still walking. I got it. So his second son, Robbie, is following in his footsteps. Older son, Kelly, does a few shows. Actually, Kelly and Robbie, their first show that they ever do together with their dad, it's at Madison Square Garden. And they're like 10 and 8 at the time.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. There's a lot of pressure on the... Can you imagine being a boy and Evel Knievel's your dad?
Nope.
Yeah. It would be pretty messed up. So Robbie is following in his footsteps as a performer. Kelly kind of backs out of that. And Robbie witnesses his dad flirting with women constantly. And it really upsets him. Because he's cheating on his mom.
Yeah, it's awful.
He becomes very angry and rebellious. Wonder where he gets that from. So one night in Butte, back in Butte, Ronnie sneaks home after being out really late. And Evil is so angry that he basically beats the hell out of him.
Aww.
Including kicking him in the head.
Jesus Christ.
His temper is awful and his family is sometimes terrified of him.
That's awful.
It's awful. Yeah. I warned you. He gives interviews where he talks about drugs, how much he hates them. But like Elvis, he thinks prescription pills are not the same as street drugs.
Oh, yes. Yes. And which is something people still think, by the way.
They still do. Absolutely. They just. Yeah. But they didn't know then. I mean, he would take them by the handful and then he was drinking whiskey all day. So you combine drugs, alcohol, and a big ego, insecurity, and a bad temper. It's not fun.
Mm-mm.
So he's spending months and months and months trying to get people interested in a Snake River jump. And he realizes he's not going to be able to do it on a motorcycle. So he's going to do it in a rocket, which is different. And this thing is the jankiest goddamn rocket you've seen in your life. It looks like something you would put next to like a cheesy diner, you know, like a 50s
right.
diner. You know, like it looks like that. It looks ridiculous. And ABC says, even though they've done a lot of shows with him, they're like, you know what? We're not going to pay for the cost of this. We'll show up. We'll film it like everybody else does, but we're not going to pay the cost. So he hires a publicity guy named Shelley Saltman. And he helps him get money to finance the gig. And he also gets press around the country. And Shelley is like a guy that's been in PR and marketing like all through the 50s, 60s, 70s. He really knew his shit. And he decided that what they should do, what they used to call it was closed circuit pay-per-view event, which was very, very new at the time because not everybody had cable. I mean, that's not, you know.
Yeah.
This is years before HBO. So it's this whole dog and pony show across America to raise awareness and get people to buy into it. So you want people to buy it, but they also want people to pay for tickets. And it was $25 a piece, which was a lot of money back then, to go and witness it in person. So he so at the last minute, they're like, well, let's make it kind of a festival, which what can go wrong in that, right? Where people pay to camp out and hang out the night before.
Yeah, and we're going to give them sandwiches of like just white bread with cheese.
Oh,
and...
God. Firefest. We got to talk about that one day. We will talk about that one day because that guy's a huge asshole.
It is on the list. And all these people are going to pay money and they're going to be so disappointed to realize there's no actual like snakes in the river.
I thought there'd be snakes on this goddamn plane.
I thought there were going to be snakes in the Snake River Valley. Fuck this.
Yeah, they make it a festival. So people start showing up, you know, a couple of days before. And most of them are the bike gangs that are showing up to once again troll evil.
You got to respect the devotion to trolling.
Oh, they're stubborn, man. They hold on to something. They got a beef with somebody.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. They're going to see it through. This part is kind of messed up and scary. So I'm going to keep this as simple as I'm going to do like a very high wire looking down what happens. Because the details you can find in the Johnny Knoxville documentary, some of them are kind of scary. So I'm going to keep this as light and fun as I can, but try to also say this was a really dangerous thing. So they had regular people. They had hippies, they had evil fans, and then they had biker gangs. Thousands of them show up. Not as many as they were expecting, but these are not people who actually learned anything from Woodstock. You know what I mean? They just... Mm-hmm. So they had a couple of trucks that sold beer and burgers, and everything was like a dollar a piece, which seemed like a lot of money to people. Another thing, people get angry about concession stands gouging them. Like years later, people still bitch about this stuff. Like they're always going to gouge you. Like that's just part of it.
It's just the thing.
It's the thing. Women are harassed everywhere. Reporters are harassed that show up. Everyone's getting drunk. Everyone's getting mean. The bikers start toppling over the beer stand, the portable toilets, and they start to light things on fire.
I was fine with all of that until they started knocking over beer stands. You've gone too far.
She likes her beer.
Yeah, I do.
The organizers tried to call the National Guard to help them out, but there was too much going on at the time, and they're like, you're on your own, dude. And one guy describes like just hearing the sound of like things burning and crashing and people screaming, and it just was fucking weird. One of the people in the press that's scared is none other than future writer of Flashdance and Showgirls, Joe Esterhaas.
What?
You brought that reference. I'm like, oh my God, does she know?
I don't. I purposely didn't look up anything about Evel Knievel before this.
Joe Esterhaas is the future writer of Flashdance and Showgirls and Basic Instinct. And he's a big personality. He was sent by Rolling Stone to cover the Evel Knievel phenomena, and he was not impressed. He thought he was stupid, rude, a bore. He didn't like his fans. Like, he saw through a lot of the bullshit that this guy was selling. You know, he was rude to his wife, that all that stuff. He would eventually write a 30,000-word piece called Evel Knievel, the King of the Goons. He talks about his bad... I'll put
goons.
Goons. He talks about his bad temper, his treatment of the press, and how badly his team handles the Snake River jump. Like they did a shitty job. This is really horrible. His hometown high school marching band, he hired them to come down to Snake River to perform. It was like a couple of $1,000, and they had all these kids in these buses. They get in the buses midnight, and they show up at this thing where everything's been burning up the night before.
Oh my gosh.
And they're kids. The oldest person is 20 years old, and he's like the director, the band director.
Mm-hmm.
So they get out of the buses, and it's not just the marching band, but they have the color guard dance team.
Yeah.
So they have girls. They have no idea. So the somebody says, get the band to play music, like get the crowd going. So you're like, dun, 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 dun. They're doing that. And the biker mm-hmm. gang is taunting the kid, the musicians, and forcing them to go out of line and then go off in a direction, not with the rest of the group. So this one guy that played the tuba, all of a sudden he shifted. He was terrified. They were throwing beer bottles and shit in his tuba. He was super scared.
Oh my God.
And he said he wound up grateful that they didn't beat him up. Like they just Jesus. Really made fun of him. He then said a friend of his was a girl on the dance team and they tried to rip her dress off.
Of course they fucking monsters.
Yes. So this is when the kids were rescued and they put them back on the bus and sent them back to Butte. Like you guys, y'all just go home.
Mm-hmm.
The jump, by the way, is 0.25 miles wide, 500 feet deep. I didn't check for metric. Sorry. You guys are meters. You'll have to figure that out for yourself. But it's a steam engine rocket called the Sky Cycle X2. There's people thinking that he's not going to pull this off. It just looks really bad. After one really particularly bad practice run, Evil holds a press conference outside of his trailer. And one of the cameramen was on the shorter side. And those old cameras back in the day, they were super heavy.
Oh, so heavy.
And big. You know, it's not like your phone you can hold up in your face now. It was really heavy. And this guy says, hey, man, can you stand up, please, so we could see you? And Evil was up. Evil had a crash and like the blood was draining to his feet. So he was tired. But of course, he immediately stands up and berates the shit out of this man. Mm-hmm. And he starts yelling at him. He completely loses his shit in front of the entire press corps. He says to the guy, you know, you smile when I tell you to smile and you will do exactly what I want you to do. And you were all lucky to be here today. All this. And whenever I see somebody like that, I'm like, what the fuck is that person like when they're home, when nobody's watching them? You know what I mean? When they're with gives me the willies.
This is how they behave in public to people they don't know. Imagine what they're like around the people they do know.
And there's no consequences. Right? It's just crazy. So he screams and curses at the cameraman and then jumps into the crowd and starts beating him up. The next day, Joe Esterhaas shows at the press conference and he sits front and center and he wears a t-shirt that says, I'm not going to smile, basically. He says, yeah. And he says to Evil, hey, man, are you going to apologize for what you pulled yesterday? And Evil starts screaming. And Esterhaas was actually kind of a big guy. So he kind of gives mm-hmm. it back to him. And then Evil storms off in a snit.
I would also like the I'm not going to smile shirt.
You know what? He was a complicated man. He wrote some shitty things, but he also, he had balls. I mean, he's also a white man in the 70s. They get away with more.
Mm-hmm.
So when the jump finally happens, the parachute was ejected out of the back of it, the rocket, right at liftoff. You know,
Deploy?
Deploy, thank you. It's supposed to be like up in the sky, deploy, and then he lands on the other side. It just fucking goes up the ramp and then boom, just goes to the ground. They can't find him at first. They're worried he's going to drown because he's in the river. His wife and kids were freaked out because they were there, of course. He had them there for all of his jumps. Mm-hmm. Everyone's freaking out. But then they fish him out. He's waving and they kind of bring him back. What happens is that the press starts to get bad press, first for his meltdowns and his tantrums. But also they're wondering, like, is this guy just, you know, a flim flam artist? Is he just like bullshitting us? Is this just a Is he just going to get killed one day and we're going to film it and that's what we're doing with our time? Some people really pushed back. So he decided, okay, I'm getting bad press. What you do is you got to kind of go underground for a little bit. So he does that. He hides from the limelight for a little bit, like 6 months or so. And then he's feeling better. He decides, I'm going to tour Europe. That's going to be good for me. I'll get some good press there and then I'll come back to the States. In 1975, Wembley Stadium, 80,000 people watched him jump over 13 English buses, those really big buses.
Wow.
He misses it and crashes at the end. Womp, womp. And by the way, I know how all this is going to happen. I still get excited when I watch these jumps. I mean, there's just so much pageantry and, you know. He asks to be held up to the top of the ramp again. So they drag him up there. And he says to the crowd, y'all, I'm going to quit. This is my last jump. Thank you for coming out, but this is it. I'm out. The next day, he calls ABC and says, can you take that part out where I said I quit? Because I don't want to quit anymore. And they're like, no, you can't. It's the best part. He's such an idiot. So
the best part.
A few months later, he sets up one more big event, and it's at Kings Island Park near Cincinnati, where I think they filmed that Brady Bunch episode where they lose the poster that Marsha got.
Yeah.
The Yogi Bear poster. The ABC Sports has the rights for this. He is now set to jump over 14 buses. And I wrote this down. It's 133 feet or it's 45.5 meters. This time he lands it perfectly. The Wide World of Sports gets their highest ratings ever at the time. So he's kind of back on top. That's his longest jump. After that, he's like, I'm not going to do the long jumps no more. This is too aggravating. So he does stuff that he will likely succeed with. And one of those was in Chicago in 1977, where he was set to jump over a tank filled with sharks. This is
this is
where they got the inspiration for the Fonzie episode where he jumps over. That's where they get it from. But unfortunately, in his practice run, he fell and crashed into a camera guy who almost lost his eye. And think about it, a camera guy losing their eye. He was okay. He was eventually okay. But Evil was so freaked out by it. He felt so bad and he was so freaked out by it that he couldn't look at it for 20 years. Let's go back to Shelley, his friend Shell. Shelley was a PR man, and he was helping him with that tour with the jump, the Canyon River jump, the Snakes River jump. And this is in 1977. He decided with Evil that one of the ways they could make money was to write a book about Evel Knievel being on the road. And he would interview Evel Knievel, and he would use an old-fashioned tape recorder and just ask him questions. Evel just says total racist, anti-Semitic, homophobic, misogynistic shit.
He does.
And Shelley has the tapes decades later. He's like, boom, play right here. This is what he said. He takes out most of it. He keeps in the pain pills, that he takes pain pills. He keeps in that he fools around on his wife, that he's flirtatious with women. But it's pretty benign compared to the real person. Evel Knievel read this. And this is just after Chicago, after he crashed. He was so fucking furious. He flies to L.A. and he brings a friend with him from Butte. Never says who it was. And he finds out. By the way, lawyers had approved the book. And Evel had signed off on everything. So what is he pissed off about? Oh, but the book, by the way, sorry. It was titled Viva Knievel. Evel Knievel on Tour. Jesus Christ.
Viva Knievel.
Viva Knievel. Long live Evel. So what's in this book? Let me just say that some of the things. A quote from Evel saying, I'm really Superman, and G.I. Joe is an F word, slur for gay people. Another quote, there's only one thing I hate more than Jews, and that's Indians.
Oh my God. That's like.
Several accounts of Evel yelling at Linda in front of other people and humiliating her. Evel was not happy about this. So like I said, he gets a friend from Butte and they find out where Shelley is. And he's at this point, he's working at 20th Century Fox in Los Angeles. He flies to see him. Once again, he has both arms in a cast because he's injured from Chicago. He gets his friend to the 20th Century lot. They call out Shelley. Shelley comes out like, hey, how you doing? Had no idea he was upset. This guy, his friend, grabs Shelley behind his back, holds his arms behind his back. And then Evil, with his bad arm, starts beating him with an aluminum baseball bat.
Oh, my God.
He beats him about the face and arms to make sure he never writes anything again.
Jesus.
Shelley's left arm was shattered and required several surgeries for him to use it again. He had a compound fracture, which is when skin breaks the bone, breaks the skin. Like, it's that fucking intense.
Oh, my gosh.
The police are called, and Evil shows up to court completely defiant. He says he's guilty, and he would do it again if he ever sees Shelley Saltman. After that court date, Evil fires his lawyer, and then he goes in for sentencing. And he tells the judge, I did it, and I do it again. And the judge says, okay, you're getting 3 years probation and 6 months in the county jail. Press is everywhere, by the way. And he's defiant. Like, yeah, fuck it, I don't care. Here's the thing. He's allowed work release, which means he only has to be in jail at night and on the weekends.
Oh, cool.
So Evil hires a limo to pick him up and take him to a local bar and hang out for the day. And then he comes back and he crashes at the jail.
Yeah, he sleeps it off at jail.
Yeah.
Awesome. Cool justice system we have.
Oh, God. When he finds out that some of his new buddies are also eligible for work release, but they don't have a way to get to work, he hires a fleet of limousines to individually take them to work. Many of them just wound up at the bar with Evil. He did this for a few days, out in the open, and the press filming everything. Mm-hmm. The judge rescinds his day pass, and Evil spends the rest of his sentence in jail. At this point, he loses all of his endorsements, including Harley Davidson and Ideal Toys. Shelley sues him for assault and wins a $13 million judgment.
Whoa.
Fuckload of money for back then.
Yes.
But it's too late because Evil had filed for bankruptcy. Would never, and he would be like that for the next 20 years. Evil just kind of, he disappears from public life for the most part. So for most of the 80s, early 90s, he kind of retreats. And then in 1997, he meets a 22-year-old, Crystal Kennedy, who is a beautiful blonde, 30 years younger than him. He immediately is smitten with her. They take their relationship public. She breaks up with her fiancé, and he asks Linda for a divorce. And Linda was so sick of him at this point that she counted herself lucky to be rid of him. Like, she just was gone. And later on, one of his friends saw Linda and said, you know, a few years after this happened, he said, oh my God, you look great. You should have left him years ago. And she said, I'm telling you right now, he was like O.J. Simpson.
Jesus.
But she never.
This is not surprising and good for her for
getting out.
Yeah, I wish she'd gotten out earlier, too. That sucks that she put up with it as long as she did.
She said she was just kind of raised to be a wife and just be obedient. Yeah. And she just, you know, it could have been her personality or whatever. But yeah, she when she talks to him, and this is like the sweetest person when she does these interviews, like she seems like the nicest, kindest person. When she just said, I just stopped liking him. I hated him at the end. I'm like, ooh, bully. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the early 2000s. Oh, Evil, by the way, married this girl. Mm-hmm. And they, Crystal Kennedy, they had a rocky relationship. We'll talk about that for the bonus ep.
Okay.
But she loved him and she took care of him. He said she was the only woman he was faithful to. All right, whatever. In the early 2000s, his career had a bit of a renaissance because of people like Johnny Knoxville.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
okay.
Jackass and Tony Hawk. And they were all talking about how this guy was a hero to them when they were kids. And then all of a sudden, extreme sports, you know, like snowboarding and jumping and everything, like, you know, road bikes and all that shit started becoming regular. People would tour these extreme sports. So he all of a sudden was like the elder statesman for these people. And he was very weak. I mean, he had drank himself to the point that he needed a new liver. you can imagine it was painful for him to walk. It was painful for him to do just about anything. But he was really psyched to be the elder statesman. He went to all the galas and the award shows where they would give him a special award. He, in the very, very end, he did call people to apologize.
Mm.
And he said to Linda, "Hey, I'm sorry." And she said, "Okay." And then he hung up. That was it.
Cool. Nice apology, dude.
He died on November 30th, 2007, at the age of 69. And that is our creep, Evel Knievel.
Good job, Margot.
Thank you.
I can't believe he even made it to 69.
It's astonishing. And once again, you guys, I mean, you can go on YouTube and just look up these jumps. I mean, 500 pounds under your legs, like trying to control that in the air. And like, of course he drank and of course he was, you know, but and the bikes nowadays are so light that his son Robbie broke all of his records, but he was Robbie Knievel. He wasn't Evel mm-hmm. Knievel. You know what I mean? So he never really caught on as big as his dad. But there, I saw like some of these jumps were like guys going over a football field, like just in the middle of the air. I mean, like it's nothing. It's incredible what they can do now. But he was doing it first, and he did it with like old, you know, heavy bikes and
yeah,
not knowing what the fuck he's doing and didn't understand, you know, physics and propulsion and all that shit. He had to learn it on his own. I kind of admire him. He's a self-made person. He was also a huge asshole. Let's just remember that. Yeah, he was a creep.
Yeah. Do you want to hear about someone who's not a creep?
Yes, please.
Okay. Do you know who Super Dave Osborne is?
I had such a crush on him.
Oh, I love that. He was, in case you don't know, he was kind of a parody of Evel Knievel.
Mm-hmm.
He wore like a white jumpsuit and a crash helmet, and he would try these crazy stunts, and they always failed, and they usually appeared to result in like bodily harm. Obviously, Super Dave Osborne is not a real person. He's played by an actor named Bob Einstein, who was born in 1942 in Los Angeles. He was the son of radio comedian Harry Einstein. I'm like, why did they change their names? Like, you know, here's why I say that, because his older brother is Albert Brooks. And I'm like, is that why I guess he didn't want to go by Albert Einstein?
Yeah, that's exactly why he did it. Yeah.
But I think it's really interesting. Honestly, I didn't know for the longest time that they were brothers. So Albert Brooks is, you know, you probably remember him from like Broadcast News, or he's the voice in like Finding Nemo and stuff. And he's this like very dry, precise comedian. And Bob, his brother, who played Super Dave, is very like goofy and, I don't know, kind of a jock
mm-hmm.
mentality. Or Gilbert Gottfried has this funny quote where he said his voice sounds like Clint Eastwood after throat surgery.
Was he in Modern Romance? Is that the movie he did, Albert
Yes.
Brooks? He has a scene where Albert Brooks is taking up jogging to get over a breakup with a girlfriend, yes. And he oversells him. It's the funniest goddamn thing. The first 30 minutes of the movie are incredible. Another one. Just watch the first 20 minutes and then go.
He's just funny as shit. Like, every time he shows up in something, he's always funny. But Super Dave Osborne was, like, the character that... He's just, it's so funny. I just remember it so vividly from when I was younger. But Bob Einstein, he didn't start out in show business, even though his dad was into it. He went to Chapman College in California, where he played basketball because he's a really tall guy. He's 6'4". Mm-hmm. And then after that, he got a job at an advertising agency. He used to write and direct TV commercials. And while he was doing that, it kind of led to this guest appearance on a talk show in Los Angeles. They were doing like a sketch where he was cast as a man who was putting the stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And then people will walk up and like bribe him to like make a star for them and stuff like that. And he got a job writing for the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, which, if you guys know anything about TV history, was pretty progressive at the time.
They got fired.
Their show got canceled because they came out against the Vietnam War. After that, Bob joined the show, the John Biner Comedy Hour
mm-hmm.
at CBS, and that's where Super Dave made his first appearance. Do you remember the show Bizarre?
No, I don't remember that.
Okay. So Bizarre was like a show that was on Canadian TV that Showtime picked up when it was like very early Showtime. And I just remember I was like, every once in a while you would see like boobs or something on Bizarre. And I was like, what is this show? I was just a kid. Anyway.
Bizarre boobs?
There were boobs. Bizarre boobs. No, just boobs. But Super Dave would show up on Bizarre. And that was always my favorite thing. After that, he started doing like Super Dave's Vegas Spectacular. And the whole joke is like he's Evel Knievel. And he's really macho like Evel Knievel. But then his stunts always, always fail. That's the joke. And it just turned into like a late night talk show staple. Like he would do Carson and Letterman. And he was always like such a good sport, such a good guest. And then he did some animated shows, which I think are really funny. And then I'm sure you watch, and this is probably where most people will recognize him from. He was on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, yeah.
As Marty Funkhauser. And he's funny as shit on that show. And there's this like really funny one where they do the Seinfeld reunion episode.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He tells this really fucked up joke and like makes Jerry Seinfeld laugh. And he's like, that's disgusting. That's a bad joke or whatever. He's really funny. I couldn't find a bad word about him. And I really looked. He was just one of those people, naturally funny. Comedians fucking love him. He's like a comedian's comedian. But he died January 2nd, 2019, cancer.
Fuck cancer.
He was 76. He was married to this woman named Roberta. They were married for more than 40 years.
Aww.
And they have one daughter named Erin. He had two grandchildren. And the family didn't issue any statements after he died, except for Albert, who said, RIP, my dear brother, Bob Einstein, a great brother, father, and husband, a brilliant, funny man. You will be missed forever.
Aww.
And that's our Not a Creep is Bob Einstein, but also
Super Dave Osborne.
Super Dave. Yeah. And if you want, you can just Google like Super Dave Osborne and watch the stunts and they're really, really funny. He's really like an entertaining dude.
He's also featured in a couple of the documentaries that I mentioned, one of them being the Robbie Knievel one. And Robbie actually successfully jumped the fountain at Caesar's Palace. And his dad was there and he asked for Super Dave Osborne if he wanted to be there too. And he was like, hell yeah. So he was like his guest, a special guest. So he got to be there for that. And he talks.
That's rad.
I know. It's like he seems like the nicest guy. He has this very deadpan delivery. He's one of those people like never cracks up.
Yes.
And that's what makes them funnier, like because they commit to that. It's such a good choice, Sonia.
Oh, thank you.
Good job.
That's who I thought of immediately when I thought of Evel Knievel.
Well, you can think of daredevils who aren't assholes. It's like you got to go through.
That's right.
Well, that's the show today, you guys. So next week we'll be back with another creep. Sonia will lead that one, and I will be challenged to come up with a non-creep. You're still deciding, aren't you? Who you're going to do?
I am. I'm really torn. We have a super long list. I really have my pick of anybody. I will have someone soon.
Yeah, you have to. We got to record next week. So we also, if you like the sound of our voices, we co-host a show called Dorking Out. Dorking Out, we talk about movies, mostly movies, right? And our next movie is going to be The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. It's going to be so great.
Yeah, inspired by one of our past episodes where we talked about Not a Creep, Charles Durning. And then we both kind of went down this rabbit hole watching Charles Durning stuff. And then next thing we knew, Best Little Whorehouse in Texas was on our list. It's going to be good. It's going to be fun.
And those episodes usually drop on Sunday. If you want to support this show, definitely join our Patreon page. Go check it out. Go to Patreon. Look up for What a Creep Podcast. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts and you like what you hear, if you could leave us 5 stars to help us combat the 1-star assholes that call us Karen, that'd be amazing. We don't buy reviews, you know, this is all organic, man. So we're trying to do it. If you have suggestions, the best thing to do, well, there's a few places you can do it. The Facebook group, once again, that's a What a Creep Podcast group. It is private, so you have to ask to join. You can send us on Twitter It's at Creep Pod. If you want to use the gif of Annie Potts from Ghostbusters saying we got one, or you have something equally clever, that's a great place to do it. Also, by the way, suggesting non-creeps. We really, really appreciate that because sometimes we have a hard time coming up with a non-creep. We're on Instagram at, what are we at? Oh, What a Creep Podcast. I was like, I lost my thought mid-sentence there. I started thinking about Charles Durning dancing, okay. I have to tell you. All of a sudden, that just popped into my head. And what else do we have Facebook, Instagram, whatacreeppodcast@gmail.com. If you have comments and suggestions, or if you like some stickers, please do it through the email. That way we could keep it. I will get them out sometime this week. Like I said, the USPS has been totally messed up. And have I forgotten anything, Sonia?
I think that is everything. Where can people find you on the internet, Margot?
Well, you can find me on social media at Brooklyn Fitchick, mostly for Twitter and Instagram. And my blog is brooklynfitchick.com.
And you can find me at thesoniashow.com and The Sonia Show on Twitter and Instagram.
And you could follow...
I'm glad we got to talk about creeps.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm glad we got to go talk about creeps, too. I want to say we also have our own website, What a Creep Podcast, right? .com?
Yes. Yeah. It is What a Creep... Sorry. Oh, my gosh. We're just like off the rails here at the end. Now we're both thinking of Charles Durning dancing. It is at whatacreeppodcast.com, and there is also there's every way to contact us on social media, and you can find all of our episodes from all 7 seasons are there.
And I'm just checking the Citizen app. The police are requesting backup. Oof. I'm staying indoors, you guys. So be safe out there. Please social distance if you can, as much as you can. Wear your masks everywhere you go. Wash your hands frequently. And don't be a creep.
Don't be a creep.
Thank you for listening to us talk about creeps. You can follow us at What a Creep Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
But don't follow us too closely.
You can email us your creepy stories at whatacreeppodcast@gmail.com.
But please keep your dick pics to yourself.